Chapter 42. Moorea, September. Thomas stepped out of the brush near their cabin with an 8-foot timber balanced on his shoulders. He wiped the sweat from his brow with his sleeve and looked over at Keani, who was weeding a row of vegetables in the rich volcanic soil of their garden. They had been married for almost 5 weeks, and, in that brief time, his life had been completely transformed. He had been a wanderer for 7 years after the end of the Civil War, drifting from town to town across the continent in search of something he couldn't even define. He'd been a soldier, gambler, newspaperman, trail hand and land speculator. He lost count of the women with whom he dallied, the saloon doors he had pushed through, the men he had fought, and the dry, dusty main streets he had walked in. It was an existence neither hot nor cold, just one day piling up on the one before, without leaving behind any sign that he had been there. Keani smiled and waved for him to join her in the garden. He set down the timber and went up on the porch to fill a gourd with water from a bucket and pour over his head. Married. If anything, he supposed, his vision of the institution when he was a younger man was of living a life of routine bordering on tedium. A solid, dependable mate, a stable job, a neat clappered house, children, church membership, and perhaps a gold watch upon his retirement. With that thought in mind, he stepped off the porch and walked towards the garden. Truth is a strange land, his poet friend, Walt Whitman, used to say. To say that his life today was a perfect reflection of that sentiment was an understatement. Their home on stilts sat just off the beach of a tranquil, deep blue cove teeming with exotic tropical fish and gloriously colored birds. 100 yards beyond the cove was a snow-white coral reef that encircled the entire island of Moorea, and, on the other side of the reef, humpback whales glided silently past. Corkscrewing dolphins spun and whirled 6 feet above the ocean surface, and great sea birds swooped low to scoop small fish into their beaks. Behind their home was a nearly impenetrable barrier of trees, bushes, and flowers that swept up the slope of Mount Mo'u'aroa, part of the chain of ancient volcanoes that towered high above the island. 11 miles to the southwest, the island of Tahiti thrust its own volcanic mountains into the cobalt sky, and 100 yards down the beach, the tiny village of Ha'apiti dotted the cove's southern rim. Aubert and Oceana had just departed for Tahiti after a 4-day visit, and Boswell would be arriving tomorrow to continue his work cataloging the teeming flora around the village. Keani was expanding the vegetable garden and looking after their sow pig and chickens, and each evening after dinner she worked with Thomas on reading sign language. He was a quick study, and he loved being able to understand her more completely, but the truth was that he was equally satisfied just to look into her eyes. Somehow, they were even more expressive than her signs. Each morning at dawn, they paddled out to the reef, where Keani demonstrated the technique and strategy of spearfishing from inside an outrigger canoe, a skill that required balance, timing, and speed. Thomas sat in the stern of the canoe and used a paddle to hold the outrigger in place, while she stood tall and graceful in the bow. Her spear held in both hands at shoulder height, her eyes were fixed on any movement below the surface, and she held her breath just before she let the spear fly. From the arch of her neck to the smoothness of her bare shoulders and the wild tumble of her hair down her back, Thomas was mesmerized by the vision. Keani almost always speared one of the dozens of fish darting in and out of the fan-shaped coral branches after 3 or 4 attempts. But Thomas had no such luck at his first attempts. It took 41 tosses, many of them accompanied by Keani's barely perceptible giggles, before he impaled his first catch, a fat, multicolored parrotfish that she insisted on gutting immediately before the flesh was fouled. His labors did not go unrewarded. That evening, they enjoyed the day's catch, drizzled in fruit juice and garlic, wrapped in tea leaves, and baked in a clay pot over hot coals. Kayani explained that the leaves did more than enhance the flavor of the fish. They were sacred to Lono, god of fertility, and Laka, the goddess of hula. And they were used by kahuna priests to ward off evil and bring in good spirits. After dinner, as the stars began to pop across the horizon and an offshore breeze cooled the land, Keani placed candles on the railing of their covered front porch and pulled a thick reed mat out onto the wooden deck. Thomas looked at her with raised eyebrows, uncertain what was happening. In reply, she flashed an impish smile and signed for him to remove his clothing and lie face down on the mat. When he was in position, she pulled off her linen dress and straddled his lower back. Then, slowly, gently, and lovingly, she laid a small amount of coconut oil onto her palms and began massaging his back and shoulders, first with her hands and later with her breasts. The only sounds in the night air were the waves breaking on the coral reef outside the cove, the rustling of palms in the soft night wind, and the crackling of coals in the cook fire. "How did she know how sore I was after today's spearfishing?" he wondered. Then he sighed, let his mind rest, and gave in to the magic. September rolled into October, and with each sunrise, Thomas awoke, looked at Keani sleeping quietly beside him on her side, and marveled at his good fortune. Life flowed through her calm and strong as the current around Moorea, even when she was sleeping. Sometimes he would lift the light sheet under which they slept so that he could take in the spectacular contours of her body, the way he would examine a classical painting in a great museum. He loved the way her back curved down to the top of her buttocks, and how, from the back of her neck to the bottom of her ankles, her body flowed in perfect harmony. One morning, she turned her head on the pillow while he was drinking her in, and immediately understood what he was doing. But she only smiled softly and turned her head to go back to sleep. Despite her clear invitation to continue, Thomas lowered the sheet, and when his head went back down on his pillow, he felt his eyes moisten. How could any woman love a man this much?